Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
Joy 94.9.
This is Gay News Week on Joy 94.9. Have your say. 1300 Joy 949.
Gay
News.
News
Week.
Gay News Week on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Good evening and welcome to Gay News Week on Joy 94.9. It's with Jeffrey, Sammy and Matt.
Here at Gay News Week, we aim to cover topics that have been in the news over the past week and how they impact you, us and our community.
On tonight's show, we will be talking about the AFL being grand final week. There's so much going on with them, including the addition of the No to Homophobia ads, the social media explosion that's going on lately and how that's affecting our outlook. And also, we're going to do a quick wrap up around the world. There's much happening in Hong Kong, Uganda, Jamaica, and so forth. If you want to get in contact at any time during the show, here's how you do so.
You're listening to the Gay Newsweek podcast with Sammy, Jeffrey, and Matt. Get in touch. Email gaynewsweek@joy.org.au or check out joy.org.au/gaynewsweek for all of the links to our social media pages.
But first, the top story. The AFL has been in the news this week after it decided to show the No to Homophobia ad campaign during last weekend's preliminary finals matches. The decision comes following calls from the nation's first openly gay footballer, Jason Ball, for a commitment to education programs in the AFL to promote a more accepting environment for GLBTIQ players in the code. But just 3 days out from the grand final, the big question is, will there be an appearance of the No to Homophobia campaign ads on game day?
We're not quite sure whether it's going to be shown on the game day. Certainly it was up on the preliminary final, and we've all struggled with the word preliminary today in the preparation, I have to say. The screening of the ad was preceded by this comment on the weekend. As part of its commitment to making football a game for everyone, the AFL is proud to support a new campaign to tackle homophobia. This campaign aims to remind people that discrimination in any form is never acceptable, whether it's on the footy field or in everyday life.
The thing is, of course, you know, the great campaign that Jason Ball has had on a social media site, and that was on change.org.
That's right. Yeah.
So he actually set up this campaign to ask the AFL to have these ads on during the matches. Mm. Now, the main structure of this campaign was to have the ads on during the grand final. So it'd be interesting to see what that happens. He started off saying that he wanted to get around 10,000 people to sign this. Very quickly within the first day, it was up to nearly 9,000. So they changed it to 30. Mm-hmm. And at this stage, it's just under 27,000 people have actually signed this petition. And I think it's in roughly 2 weeks. So
they haven't quite actually hit that 30,000 marks, but they've gone way over the initial 10,000.
They've revised the total twice.
Wow, okay. So it's clearly gaining some momentum. So there are enough supporters out there in the world, basically.
So, of course, when he was actually interviewed, he said that young people who are gay are six times more likely to suffer from depression, self-harm or contemplate suicide. He said during an interview on Melbourne radio station 3AW, the football community so far has been part of the problem, so he's really grateful that the AFL is going to be part of the solution.
I think it is really important that we hope that this is going to be shown during the AFL Grand Final, because I think that all of those reasons around depression and about reducing stigma and reducing suicidal thoughts and all of those things are related, and getting the message out there into the greater community is certainly the step, and it's certainly what Jason Ball wanted from the campaign that he put up and the message that he put through to Andrew Demetriou at the AFL.
I think it is awesome that they have shown them at the preliminary finals matches, but I'm scared that because they've shown them at those finals matches that they think they're off the hook and they won't go and show them at the grand final. What are your thoughts on that?
I think the thing is you know, they were showed to a broad audience. Mm-hmm. They were expecting 70 or 80,000 people because both of the matches were sold out. So, of course, Friday night was Sydney Collingwood in Sydney, and then the Hawthorn Crows match at the MCG on Saturday. I suppose my fear for this is that this is going to be an extremely broad audience. It's going to be an international audience, and, you know, whether they're going to want to take that plunge, but, you know, I'm very, very hopeful that they will look at this and say, this is our chance to show the rest of the world, because, like I said, there's going to be a large international audience as well. This is the largest sport in Australia and we're working towards this.
I know what you're saying, but not everybody sits down and watches the prelims. But exactly. Grand final, almost the whole nation stops and sits down and watches this game. That's obviously the target for these ads and for this whole campaign. Whether it happens or not. Mm.
And you certainly want to think that these ads are going to be shown not only at the ground on the big screen, but also during the telecast, because obviously the game will be telecast live. Mm. So you would want it to be shown in both of those mediums because there are different people at each. But I think the broader reach in televising such an ad during the television broadcast is probably one of the things we additionally would like.
I think the thing that we will have going against us in a broadcast like this is normally these ads are ads that are included in the community spots, which means they're ads that are provided by the station. So the issue that we are going to have against us with those ads being shown by the television stations is you're talking primetime television, as it is with the Super Bowl in America. Advertisers are paying premium rates to have their goods out there for the public during these times. So we can again hope that the social conscience of some of the television executives will also say, hey, this is a perfect example for us to be able to show these ads.
One of the other things that's happening in the AFL space over the last week is some conversation about whether there might be a gay pride round or a GLBTIQ pride round, I guess, so that we broaden it out to our whole community. And it's about wondering whether that's going to occur. And there's some comment from Andrew Demetrio saying, a pride game is one of the options we're looking at. If we get behind something we genuinely believe in, and it's something that we think we can help raise awareness with and shift attitudes, then we would support it. So he's not ruling it out, but he's not ruling it in either.
Mm, I'd love to see it because it's something that it's really going to bring a lot of attention to it, really, because people are that's the whole reason that they play these games, is because they're brought to you for the pride round. So it's a good. I would really like it. I'd really like to see that it happens.
The other thing that I'm very excited for, of course, there's been a lot of media attention this year that we're having our first female umpire ever at a grand final. Now, you know, women have come a long way in being able to be participants on the ground in the AFL, and we have, you know, female umpires now. So it is also a great time, you know, for women in the community to be able to stand up and say, you know, for the first time we have a female umpire.
There's been some media out there over the last week or two from women who report on football saying that there's still a very blokey culture, and certainly there was a lot of to-do around some women trainers and things quite a few years ago, and there's been a move to get women on boards of AFL clubs. So certainly getting a female into the umpiring roles means that we'll be moving pretty closely towards having women in all areas of the AFL other than the very obvious one, which is playing the game.
Mm. But I was actually really surprised when, Sammy, you told me this afternoon that a female umpire has never been in the grand final. I was aware that there were female goal umpires in the code itself, but I was really surprised.
I saw a fantastic interview with her this morning on one of the commercial breakfast shows, and she was discussing and about how, you know, she basically trains as hard as the guys, and she still had to go through exactly the same things, and it is a very physically strenuous thing to be able to go through this. So she was picked not because of her sex, but the fact that she is very good at what she does, and you know, she keeps up with the blokes. We've had a message in.
We certainly have. Sammy from South Yarra says, I've yet to read or hear from anyone who was actually at the match last Saturday at the MCG and saw the advert. So we have been told it was played, but did anyone see it? Well, did you guys, were you guys at the games?
No, I wasn't.
No?
I wasn't, no.
So let us know. If you were at the game and saw the adverts, let us know 0427JOY949 or email onair@joy.org.au. You are listening to Gay News Week right here on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Gay News Week on Joy 94.9.
With the discussion tonight so far on the AFL and the inclusion of the ads through the No to Homophobia campaign, which was started up through Jason Ball and his inclusion with using the website change.org, there's been so much happening in the social media arena lately. I think it's very interesting to see how petitions and how information is actually getting out there to people through these mediums.
Mm, certainly. There's one term that I've heard that really sums it up really well, and that's called clicktivism. So it's like activism by the click of your mouse. And there's been a lot of controversy behind the whole concept of clicktivism, of whether it actually makes any change. But I think that argument is kind of made redundant in itself by just looking at, say, the Jason Ball thing, that it has got action, it has got results, this survey. So
really, I think you're right. When we're talking about something like clicktivism, we are talking about people clicking, and it's a very small commitment to be able to sign on to some of these surveys. So yes, you might come up with a high number, but it's a very different experience to getting people to get out of their comfort zone or go to a rally or actually write a letter and draft something and send it or post it, whether that's electronically or otherwise. So to just click requires such a little effort that to get high numbers is not going to be difficult. So I think we need to change our ideas on what a reasonable level of response is that is actually meaningful, because it is much easier. So getting 5,000 letters in the mail, what does that equate to getting 25,000 clicks?
Well, you see, with a lot of these kind of online surveys and these petitions that are online, that they often will set something up where you just put in your name and email address and where you're from, and they can actually send a letter for you. They'll email it for you. So whether really that is the same as writing a handwritten letter, whether it gets the same response from politicians, it probably not. Yeah, I understand that. But at the same time, it's still showing that people are like time poor these days, and people don't have the time to sit down and write a letter about things unless they're really, really passionate about it. So I think it's just bringing, like, these people care about it, they press the button, and then people get to see that they care about it.
I think we have seen a definite rise in this, particularly with the marriage equality debate heating up in the last year or so. We have seen a rise in a lot of these organisations being able to go through these mediums to putting up petitions. Of course, you know, with that, with GetUp, they had the It's Time campaign, which was quite recently. And there's been several other campaigns through these organisations. And we've actually seen people getting on there and actually affecting change through the ability to actually click on and make a difference.
I think you're right. I think one of the things that comes to mind for me is the ability to create campaigns and do it quickly and do it in real time. I think they're really important features. And the fact that anyone can raise an issue, put a petition out there, is very democratizing. It spreads the ability to create change to beyond people that write newspapers or that are inside organisations that traditionally did petitions and stood on street corners or at supermarkets or knocked door to door to get them signed. So I think it's a great change in that respect, the democratisation and the breadth and timeliness of responses.
It is the change, but is it going to have the same effect is the kind of question. And sure, because back in, we didn't really have the internet before we had the internet, but and that's the thing. Will it actually have the same kind of power? That's what I'm interested in.
I think that you've got a very good point there, because, you know, in the past, the politicians are actually being quite affected by them actually receiving, you know, hundreds or thousands of letters in the mail from people around Australia that are actually feeling quite affected on statements that they'd made that were televised on Channel 2 in Parliament. And but nowadays, the other thing is too, is we have, you know, these great shows like Q&A where they're getting down and dirty and into the issues. And you actually look, I mean, I watch Q&A pretty much every week and quite often get involved in the Twitter conversations on there. Now, Q&A is one of those shows that they quite often show the feeds up there and, you know, it's talked about quite a lot, and that creates also a lot more content and a lot more information being shared from what people are tweeting. So they're actually affecting change as well through that.
Yeah, it's a very good point. With yeah, the birth of social media, people can actually ask the questions on Q&A, which has been seen regularly. All you need is a webcam or even just a Twitter account where you can just tweet the question and they can be asked if, obviously, the ABC deems it appropriate.
I think there's certainly a hierarchy of responses when you're dealing with people in positions of power. So there's probably at the apex of the powerful things a one-on-one conversation. So going and seeing your local politician in person probably is going to be the most effective. That might equate to, I don't know, receiving 10 handwritten or typed letters in the mail, which probably equates to, I don't know, 10 times that number by email. So there probably is that hierarchy of responses. But I've certainly heard when we're talking about the marriage debate that going to see your politician is the most important thing you can do to make a response, because once they have someone and they can put a face to it, it's more likely to stay in their memory and cause them to change their words and their responses and their voting.
But you see, social media, it's not just one way. It is a two-way channel of communication. And we've just spoken about us sending messages to the pollies, but also we had a look this afternoon about the pollies and how many people want to listen to their message and how many people are being reached by the message of these pollies. And it's actually quite interesting to see the numbers and the kind of clout that each politician or prominent person has on Twitter or Facebook or whatever.
Well, the interesting thing is, and this is to relate how our politicians are currently on Twitter to some rather large personalities that have followers on Twitter. So you're talking about Gaga that has 53 million.
She seems to kind of just own social networks wherever she goes. When we look over to Twitter, she's got 29 million followers and Facebook 53 million. That's a lot of people that she's reaching by really just having music and having that kind of brand out there.
And the reality is as we've seen with something like Facebook, is you don't actually have to follow them to actually have a look at the content. A lot of them have actually got pages that you like and follow that information. But the reality is a lot of these stars and also politicians are actually posting relevant information, not only about their electorate, but things that they're working on and things that they know that they want to get to the people, because a lot of people are accessing them through the social media.
Unlike a lot of other the stars and things that use Facebook and Twitter, it seems to me that the stars actually have more Facebook followers Facebook likes than Twitter followers. It's reversed somewhat with politicians in that Julia Gillard has 133,000 likes on Facebook, but actually has 277,000 followers on Twitter. And if we go to Kevin Rudd, he goes from 70,000 likes to 1.5 million followers. So there's sort of a reversal there, which sort of says that the politicians must be using it differently to people that are stars or movie stars or musicians.
One thing I can shed a little bit of light on, because I am actually a fairly prominent user of Twitter. I like it.
You're the twink that tweets.
Well, I could change my name to that. There we go.
Yes.
But one thing with Kevin Rudd especially, you said just then he's got 1.5 million followers on Twitter. He actually replies to people's tweets, and that's one thing that really gets a lot of kind
Absolutely.
Of following, is somebody can tweet a question to Kevin and have their question replied to by Kevin himself. And that matters to people. He's having that connection with politicians and celebrities alike.
Can I also say, you know, we're talking that Julia's only got, you know, just under 300,000 followers. You know, Gay Newsweek is one of those followers. Now, she's actually also following Gay Newsweek on Twitter.
Oh, good on her.
So it's rather exciting.
Yeah. I wonder if she listens.
But, you know, we're talking about... Yeah, well, there's that. We're talking about, you know, people like Gaga, 29 million, Pink, 11 million, Bieber, 28 million.
Yeah, he's a big one. He's got a big following, though. It's all the teenage girls and me. What?
How is that different?
Yeah. You know, then you go down to people like Oprah and Ellen, both on 14 million.
Yep. Big numbers.
And then our politicians, Jeffrey.
Yeah, our politicians, certainly, that I mentioned before. And if we go to the opposition side of politics, because we've already mentioned Julia and Kevin. If we go to Tony Abbott, he's got 29,000 followers, and Turnbull has 121,000 followers. So obviously Malcolm Turnbull, who has taken a little bit out of the Rudd book in that he actually responds to a lot of his tweets and actually is very interactive with his followers. So,
well, for the opposition minister for communications, you'd hope he could communicate, really.
Well, you know, I would also like to see, you know, the Twitter followers between Abbott and Turnbull to count in the popularity stakes next time Turnbull makes a run for the leadership, you know. I've got more Twitter followers, so I should win.
Do you reckon that's going to go in his favour, do you reckon?
Well, you know, no, probably not, but I'd just say I would like to see it count. But on the other hand, the current American president, of course, we've got to say current American president because we're in the midst of a massive presidential race at the moment. Obama's got 20 million followers.
Yeah, I mean, that's just huge. And I didn't actually have a look at Romney, but he's obviously a newer player and hasn't been on the national scene for the 4 years.
I'm sorry, Jeffrey, do we care? It's Romney.
Well, yeah, it just would have been interesting because I actually think in terms of appealing to the youth vote, which is, I think, something that if we look around the politicians that we've talked about, we could pretty safely say that in Australia, Kevin Rudd and Malcolm Turnbull probably appeal more directly to the younger vote. So, and I think Obama, we can say probably certainly 4 years ago, appealed to a younger vote.
We've just had a message in again, Matt.
From Caroline, from Our Voice here on Joy. And she's asked a question, actually. When you hear about blah, blah is trending worldwide on Twitter, how is this known? It's actually a really interesting concept because the algorithms are actually kept quite secret by Twitter by working out what's most popular at when. But basically, it's whoever's tweeting the most about a certain topic.
Or they're being tweeted about with, say, a hashtag. So, for example, when Joy joined forces with 3AW and we ran our youth forum here in City Square.
Thank you.
Spat that one out. In Australia alone, for the period of about 3 hours, the hashtag 3AW Joy Broadcast, Joy 3AW Broadcast, was the leading topic in Australia for those 3 hours, which was absolutely amazing and made all of us feel incredibly proud to be part of something like that.
And see, trending worldwide on Twitter or trending on Twitter, it can sometimes be criticised and ridiculed a little bit, but they're real people talking about those issues. So it's actually really important that, like, some people think, oh, no, it's not really that important because, oh, it's just Twitter. But still, it's people caring about issues. And especially with the Joy and 3AW broadcast, that was important issues for our community to be talked about within the whole sphere.
And the reality is we were being retweeted by a lot of big organisations. I mean, you know, things like MX and all that sort of stuff were retweeting.
Yeah, the final comment I have on this is that Twitter has 13 million people using it worldwide and Facebook has 500 million. So you also need to factor those sorts of things in when you're considering the influence and power of these social media platforms. You're listening to Gay Newsweek.
You're listening to Gay Newsweek on Joy 94.9.
Of course.
And just correcting something that I said before the break, Twitter followers are actually 500 million, so it's much the same as Facebook. So, moving from that.
Yes, we've had a message from Caroline also, again, asking about Twitter trending, and she said, thank you for answering your question, but how do we know what is trending? Where is it publicised? Where do we find the information? Now, see, Twitter used to have that information on their front page. You didn't even have to have an account. You didn't have to log in. It was just there on the front page. But see, as they've changed kind of the website design and such, they've clearly made it so something you have to log in to see. It's kind of the information. So you have to be a member. You have to be tweeting and get roped in, obviously, to know what's trending. So yeah, once you've logged in, you can see what's trending. And of course, if you want to follow Gay Newsweek on Twitter, why not do that? At Gay Newsweek Joy. We're a bit lonely at the moment. And we always promote what's coming up on the show before the show. So you can find out what we're going to talk about.
Absolutely. And we only have a couple of less followers than Jim Wallace from the ACL. So yes, get us up there and above him.
We need to win.
Now, speaking of crazy people, and I say this quite seriously, a little known former Liberal Party member is running as an independent in next month's ACT elections. Now, this man is an absolute gem, Philip Pocock. I knew I was going to stuff that up. He's actually a consult psychologist. Now, the gems that come out of his mouth are inclusions of homosexual unions are not only deserve no special rights, but must be seen as destructive behaviours that should be actively discouraged, i.e. all homosexual relationships by their very nature are
masochistic.
Thank you very much, in nature. So, you know, this guy's a real winner.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. He's yeah. Obviously, his views go as far as the recriminalisation of homosexual sex and for the right to discriminate against gay people. Clearly, a very smart person.
So he actually says, and I'm quoting here, "Indeed, I believe sodomy of a man or a woman should be regarded as a criminal offence. And while people do not have the right to go poofter bashing, to use colloquial language, they should have the right to discriminate in terms of employment, accommodation, etc., as they do in dealing with drug addicts."
But this man not only currently treats people for issues that they have regarding sexual identity and whatever. This is the way that he enforces his beliefs. Now, part of his belief system also includes that a man and a woman should stay married regardless of mistreatment or infidelity.
And this man is from the Parliament.
Really? I might turn straight and marry him.
Yeah, so this man's running for the Territory Parliament in the Australian Capital Territory. And as you say, he does have a history with the Liberal Party, but is now no longer a member. It's good to see that the Liberal leader in the ACT is actually distancing himself from this man and his comments. So that's quite reassuring for people that are voting up there in the Australian Capital Territory.
It is very commendable for the leader of the Liberal Party, may I say, that because it's quite easy just to let him be one of those people that are outspoken. But no, I think what he said is definitely crossed the line tenfold.
Now, Matt, speaking of politicians, we got a bit of a positive spin on a politician in Hong Kong, I believe.
That's right. We have our first openly gay Hong Kong politician. Very hard to say. So what's happening with him?
The politician is called Raymond Chan, who won a seat in the country's legislature last week, and he plans to use his four-year term to push for full democracy and the legalisation of same-sex marriage. And I think remembering that Hong Kong is recognised as a part of China and there's a very interesting dynamic going on there, and China is very opposed, I think it's a very brave thing for him to do, and I think standing up as a gay person in that community is going to hopefully bring some benefits, but it's going to be a very hard road.
It's actually nice to see politicians that identify as being gay or members of the GLBTI community being able to have that confidence to stand up and for themselves and be able to fight for the rights for their community.
While we are staying overseas, it's quite interesting to note that the Get Up campaign at the It's Time advert that was released how long ago? It was a couple of months ago, I think, about saying it's time for marriage equality in Australia. It's quite interesting to note that it's been picked up and it's gone a little bit viral and gone global, that it's it'll be now screened on US televisions.
Yeah, certainly. As I understand it, they're going to do a bit of a rewording on it, so because it is Australian speaking, so they'll redo some of the audio. Mm-hmm. But that said, I think it's fantastic, because if you've not seen the clip, I think it's certainly worth going and having a look. It is really very moving, and it has a bit of a twist in the end, so you don't necessarily know what the ad's about until you get to the end. And I think that's a great hook in the campaign, because it keeps you going, oh, what's this about? It's really sweet, it's really nice. Oh, it's actually about equal marriage.
And it's interesting that obviously the US elections are happening soon, so that these ads are expected to be shown during the elections. And of course, we've heard quite enough of the Republican Party and their view on same-sex marriage.
Absolutely. And while we are overseas for a while, taking a little bit of a downturn in the beliefs of some of these wonderful countries that are overseas. Of course, you know, recently the Malaysian government has begun holding seminars to help not only parents but also teachers and members of the public to identify members of gays and lesbians that are living among them.
Now, the interesting Sammy, how do they do that? What advice do they give for the interested Malaysian parent?
Do you check to see if they've got like a Grindr profile or what? Let us know,
no,
Sammy.
No, wearing V-necks, wearing colourful clothing.
Of course, yes.
And also, you're a lesbian if you don't hold discussions with men, and you're a woman that likes to sleep beside other women.
Well, at least that last bit probably has some accuracy about
it. I think that's a bit of a given.
Yeah.
Really? But, you know, there are probably a lot of straight women that, you know, like to have sleepovers with their friends, and, you know, it's totally. But it's really quite interesting that an actual government is releasing this information for people to sign up and go, yes, that's fine. We can now walk around town and identify the people that are living among us.
So it's the education minister in Malaysia who has come out with this document and this helpful document for parents and for schools in identifying. And the point of it is that you identify the kid as being potentially gay or lesbian, and then you can put measures in place to convert them or change them or to decrease that influence in their life. So thank you to the Malaysian government for helping the families of Malaysia, I guess.
Just looking around the Joy office this afternoon, it turns out there aren't many gay people around here, if we're judging on the colourful T-shirts and stuff. I mean, oh, okay, so I'm wearing pink today. But other people I was looking around, apparently Michael Dalton, he's not gay. He was wearing a dark T-shirt today, and I don't think it was even a V-neck.
And I spend most of my time here talking to men, so... But yeah, no, sorry, I do like to sleep with women. Unfortunately, Uganda is once again in the spotlight for them just being incredibly...
stupid.
Yeah, that's a good way of actually saying
let's go
it.
With that.
Yeah, so the British producer of a gay-themed play staged in Uganda is in jail pending trial charges on work that he has performed, a gay play, without authorisation from the state. So a sad story that because he didn't seek the necessary approval, which in all reasonableness he probably wouldn't have got had he applied, he's ended up in jail.
Very sad story. Obviously, the thoughts of us are with him and his family, and hoping that it all comes out all right there.
And we've talked about the really sad state of affairs in Uganda before.
Oh, absolutely. And of course, you know, Jamaica is the place to be if you want to be part of a march which is an anti-gay movement. Christian extremists have took place in a march against homosexuality and other vices last week. So I'm sorry, boys, we missed it.
Oh, bummer. Maybe next year.
The event, the great thing is at the conclusion of this event, they had this amazing concert and they had prayers and testimonies about being delivered from sexual sin.
Sounds interesting. Maybe I'm kicking myself I couldn't make it.
Oh,
I think
really
we're
sad.
Going to need to put that one in our calendars for next year and do an outside broadcast. And I can see that our technical producer is very enthusiastically wanting to go to that to support us.
You're listening to Gay Newsweek on Joy 94.9.
Hi, it's Tanya Plibersek on Gay Newsweek on Joy 94.9.
Gary Singer is an Australian politician who lives here in Melbourne, who has previously been the Deputy Lord Mayor of this city. And he has made a decision and declared his intention to run for the position of Lord Mayor, going up against the current Lord Mayor, Robert Doyle, in the election, which will be coming around pretty soon. So that's pretty exciting. For those that don't know, Gary Singer is a member of the gay and lesbian community, and he and his partner are certainly very strong supporters of Joy 94.9. And he's, as we said, been previously the Deputy Lord Mayor, and it was under his stewardship that there was a recognition register created by the City of Melbourne for same-sex couples. So certainly this is a really exciting move forward for Gary and potentially for the city.
Gary was a deputy mayor under John So. Now, running under the ticket with Gary this time will be John So's son, John So.
Also named John.
That's right. So the thing is, it is a great symbiont of movement forward of the tradition continuing. Now, Gary has, as Jeffrey said, been an amazing supporter of the community as a whole, but also been a very hard worker for the City of Melbourne for many years.
And the team has kind of proposed a few policies, and of course he's looking for things like 24-hour trains and tram services on Friday and Saturday nights.
Good.
Definitely good,
oh,
I think, especially
awesome.
Like after we've been it's been in kind of the public spotlight of the violence in the city, and it's just all about getting people away from the city when they're done, so they're not just kind of stuck around causing trouble.
Of course, and the costs, you know, for those of us that live quite a great deal out of the city, you know, the train's sort of stopping after midnight, it is quite hard to get home from the city and quite expensive.
Mm. Other things they've proposed are free Swanson Street tram from Melbourne University to Southbank, so it's travelling all the way basically down the centre of the city. Excellent for just people just coming in for the day, just looking to get around and see some sights. Also, micro police stations in entertainment strips like King Street, Russell Street, Docklands and Southbank. Obviously, a bit of an emphasis on stamping out kind of like the city violence, which... very good thing, in my opinion.
I think those sort of things are really important. I think other things that are notable about this election is that the Labor Party has decided not to endorse a candidate in this election. So Robert Doyle, who is the Liberal candidate, is running again, and he's going to be even in Adam Band, who is the Green member federally for Melbourne, and so the seat of the city of Melbourne's within his electorate, says that he thinks Robert Doyle's going to be very hard to unseat. And so we're not quite sure how that'll play out without Labor in the city and with Robert Doyle probably having a pretty high and fairly positive profile. It'll be a difficult election.
Robert Doyle has been also an extremely great supporter of Joy 94.9. Of course, you know, he helped, you know, he's been here at the station quite a number of times. You know, we've had many events that they've hosted us at the Melbourne Town Hall, and he has been an amazing supporter. It is very exciting to also see Gary running. I mean, we know that, you know, Gary's campaign has also said that, you know, they do understand that that Robert is a cashed up front runner, but anything could happen with preferences. But it is great to see someone that again, who is a great member of our community and also a great supporter of Joy running.
And as I said, the Labor Party is choosing not to endorse any of the people that are actually running. So beyond not putting forward their own candidate, they're not actually entering the conversation about the election. So says Noah Carroll, the ALP Secretary for Victoria. So that's a bit unfortunate.
While we're on the issue, we always award an Icon of the Week here at Gay News Week, and this week we have decided to award it to Mr. Gary Singer himself. So congratulations to him.
Now, something very interesting that's also happening around in the media at the moment is there has been there's been another online campaign started up by anti-gay group 1 Million Mums. Now, they sort of came to prominence within our community a short while ago with the great new TV series that started in America called The New Normal, about two gay dads. And that's had, you know, critical acclaim for being such a wonderful show and a great representation of our community. Jennifer Lopez is executive producer and is getting running a new lesbian TV drama. It's actually showing, you know, with women being involved in relationship, raising their own biological and adoptive children and the trials and tribulations involved in that. These are anti-gay group campaigners have actually started off again another campaign to get this taken off the air before it gets put on.
The project, which is the show's title at the moment, that could vary, it tells the story of Steph and Lena, who are a mixed-race couple raising a biological son along with several adopted children. So it's a very alternate and new family structure that's in this this drama, and so this is part of what the opposition is about. And certainly the authors of this script and some other people involved in it have written scripts for Queer as Folk, and so there's a bit of quality talent in terms of acting talent and also production and writing talent behind this. So you've got to have some pretty high expectations of what the end product will be.
And in a feel-good kind of statement that this 1 Million Mums group has put out, Hollywood is continuing to push an agenda that homosexuality is acceptable when scripture states clearly it is a sin. Absolutely lovely, isn't it?
I think the best thing that we can actually take away from their totally derogatory statement is that Hollywood is continuing to push an agenda that homosexuality is acceptable. And that is the amazing thing that we can actually take away from this. You know, gone are the days where there was almost nothing on TV. Then we had Will and Grace, and we've rolled on to a position now where, you know, we've got Modern Family. It's so totally acceptable for that to be part of the daytime viewing. That's on at 7 o'clock here in Australia. So it's during a time when primary school age children are actually still in front of the television. And, you know, we're moving on into an era where this is available.
And certainly role models in shows have become more common, and with Ellen and a lot of softer shows. But there have also been some really well-produced shows like Queer as Folk and like The L Word, which show a bit grittier content and actually address some of the sexual issues and sexual content that go on in our lives. So I actually think that's a really, really good representation, and I'm looking forward to seeing this, even though obviously I'm not part of the target audience per se, because I'm imagining the main target audience is going
really?
To be the girls that are well known to us here.
Me, in other words, yes.
Well, you.
Well, speaking of TV.
Speaking of TV, yes, Bent TV is coming back to our screens. And a few of the topics that they're going to be covering in this season is women over 40, queer families, body image, which I thought was quite interesting, body image, and furries. That will be interesting in itself. And also, one of the first topics that they're going to be covering is, can we pray the gay away? Very interesting, I'm sure. And bisexuality is a myth. They're two of the topics that they're going to be covering.
Well, Bent always does a couple of, during their season, does a couple of great debates. Now, the thing is a lot of the times the debates are a bit tongue-in-cheek. So this bisexuality is a myth. I was listening to a few of the guys actually talking about this. It's supposed to be a tongue-in-cheek representation. Of course, everyone believes in one side of the argument, but unfortunately there have to be people in the negative or the positive in this. It's great to see Bent back on the Box, which was a fundraiser that they rang last year. You can actually find out, you can go to Channel 31, so it's c31.org.au, and get information about this. It's a wonderful GLBTI media organisation. They're absolutely fantastic, and there's always some great things, and they were always on, I think, on a Saturday night.
Mm, it's very educational, I found, actually, watching Bent TV, and sticking with with the whole educational theme is Sex Ed in Schools, the Australian Curriculum Assessment and Reporting Authority. Authority has released its shade paper on health and physical education. Well, they did it last month, and they've announced that the curriculum, which is due in 2014, is expected to educate students on diverse sexuality and gender education kind of issues, which I think is actually really great, because so far in schools the sex ed's been crap, really.
The writing themselves document that they produced in 2010 found 44% of LGBTI people did not find their sexuality education at school useful at all. So that's a pretty high percentage. And the proposed curriculum changes says that from grade 9 they can have this education onwards. From year 9, that seems a little late to me to be starting, but I don't know.
Better late than never, is all I'm saying, is because at the moment there is nothing in the curriculum as far as...
Well, you know, I'm going back to sort of 30 years ago, 25 years ago, and the sex education that we got in school, I think I was in grade 5, it's here, read this book, and no questions were answered. And, you know, sort of we got our sex education in high school on the playground. There was no health and community and human services or whatever it's called to be able to be offered to us at school. But I mean, you know, Matt, you're a little bit closer to graduating high school than what we are.
Mm.
How do you feel that it's changed at all from when you were at school?
Well, like, as far as the sex education that I got, it was crap. Like, there was nothing really in it that was actually useful to me, to be honest. Like, I learnt more things from hide and seek, for God's sakes, let alone, like, and school is where you should be actually learning these things. It's because obviously you're hitting puberty during high school, and these are the times where you need your questions answered. School didn't provide it. The schoolyard, exactly. The schoolyard was the one that informed me. And, yeah, listening to shows like Hide and Seek.
You certainly want something a bit more reliable and than what you get in the schoolyard, whether yes. Hide and Seek is the first place you should start. And
well, it can be quite a, you know, Dean puts, of course, we're talking about Hide and Seek, which is a show you can see here on Joy 94.9 at 9 p.m. on a Thursday. And it is an incredibly amazingly informative
Certainly is.
Show.
I've learned a few things from it.
Even, yeah, it's not something that I listen to on a regular basis. I do love the content, but yeah, some of that's... But the reality is what you actually, what this is actually showing to me too, that the education system is actually saying that we need to provide support to members of the junior members of a GLBTI community, realising the sensitivity of our youth.
Okay, and my sex education involved the breeding of mice at high school in year 7 and then talking about what they had done. So it was very non-GLBTI friendly.
Oh, wonderful. And on that note, you're listening to Gay Newsweek right here on Joy 94.9.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Cannis, listening to Gay News Week with Jeffrey, Sammy and Matt on Joy 94.9.
And we were talking just before about sex ed in schools and what your experiences were. Kyle from Monday Breakfast has texted in and said, sex ed for me involved putting a condom on a banana and watching a video of a woman giving birth. I tell you what, I didn't even get to experience putting a condom on a banana. That wasn't taught in my school. Jesus.
He also says he still doesn't know what goes where.
Oh, I can educate you later.
My heart goes
maybe
out to you, not.
On a banana. Anyway, go on.
Okay, this has been Gay News Week, but unfortunately, that's pretty much all we've got time for this week. We need to thank everyone who joined in our conversation tonight, particularly by the email and SMSs. And we've got to thank our technical producer, Matt Nock, for pushing our buttons for us so competently as always.
If at any time during the week you wish to get in contact with us or suggest topics, email us at gaynewsweek@joy.org.au or head to joy.org.au to find all the links to all of our social media profiles, including, as we've talked about tonight, Facebook and Twitter. Also, feel free to suggest any topics you want to hear by tweeting them to us at Gay News Week Joy and also on our Facebook page.
Of course, we always do appreciate listening to the topics that you're interested in. And as well, if you missed any part of tonight's show or any show that we've broadcast through our time here on Joy, you can find the podcast online at joy.org.au. But until next week, we are Jeffrey, Sammy and Matt. This has been Gay News Week.
Here's news. They say no news is good news, right? But no news means no Gay News Week. And that would be bad news. Bad, bad news. So for news you can't refuse, choose Gay News. On Joy 94.9. Now there's something for you to muse.
That rhymes.
You've been listening to Gay News Week. Check out joy.org.au/gaynewsweek for all of the links on how you can keep up to date with the team on social media. And be sure to tune in next Wednesday from 7 p.m. right here on Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with Joy.